Before we step into the Ready Room, a quick note about this episode. We recorded just after episode 5, Stardust City Rag, and this is intended to be a look at how we were feeling about Star Trek Picard at mid-season. Due to some very unexpected life events, I was unable to produce and publish until now, after episode 7, Nepenthe, so please keep in mind that our takes are based on information through episode 5, and some of our speculation and questions have since been answered. Still, I hope you enjoy the discussion as a mid-season assessment of the new series. We'll do another to look back at the whole story after the finale.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Do you enjoy Trek FM podcasts? We need your help to keep our shows and the network going. If you'd like to become part of our crew, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how to become an associate producer, take part in roundtable discussions, and more. And we send a huge thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field and it should come up. Or, if you prefer Twitter, you can follow us at Trek FM. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 224, Emergency Double Agent Hologram. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Matthew Rushing. In this episode, we turn our shared analytical eye, normally focused on Deep Space Nine, toward Star Trek Picard as the series hits the midpoint of its first season. We share our thoughts on the tone and the direction of the new show, characters old and new, what happened in the first 5 episodes, and where we would like things to go from here. We have a lot of ground to cover, so let's step into the Ready Room. Well, hello. What, you're not Larry, Matthew. What are you doing here? Did you open an orb that I was not expecting to be lying around?
I think I opened the orb of transportation, and I ended up here, and Larry ended up somewhere else. In fact, I apologize, Larry. I have no idea where you ended up. So, oh, I mean, he could be on Alpha Centauri. He could be on Risa. I'm not sure.
He could, or he could be hosting the 602 Club.
That's he could be. You never know.
Who knows what's going on?
Yeah. So I'm just here, and so it's good to see you. It's been a while.
It has been a while, and I'm glad we could get back together. And I know people are saying, "Wait, Chris and Matthew, why are you getting together in the Ready Room? Why aren't you doing an orb? We want an orb, and we know everyone wants an orb, and we're certainly going to do one soon. We want to record one, but what we wanted to talk about is Picard." And Matthew said, why don't we do a Ready Room about Picard so we can share our thoughts? Because we've been chatting, Matthew and I have, you know, behind the scenes as we chat on messages and sharing our thoughts on Picard. And I thought it was a great idea you had for us to hop on here so we can share our thoughts, which I think for both of us will be the first time to share thoughts on mic about this new series.
Yeah, I mean, definitely for me. I mean, I feel like it's been a long time since I've actually talked anything Star Trek on mic. You know, probably the last time was when the last time we recorded an orb. So it'll be kind of fun to dip my toe back into the Trek universe after so many hours in other universes. You know, Chris, I was just noticing that I guess it's been like 7 years since we've been podcasting together. And
at least, yeah.
Goodness, the gray hair has just expounded exponentially on both of our faces and, you know, heads. So I was like, wow, Chris and I are getting old.
It's true. And before you said both of us, I thought you were just talking about my beard.
No, it's me too, because it's the, like, I was just like, wow, goodness. Okay,
it is. You can see that we're getting older.
Yeah, so, we're bringing the wisdom back to the ready room. That's what it is.
Yeah, we need to do that. And we're going to go with just a straight discussion format on today's show. No news segment. We're just going to focus on Picard, which is, of course, sort of a format Larry and I have been doing for a while anyway. And, you know, Matthew, when you suggested we get on here and do this, one reason I was especially interested, besides the fact that you're one of my favorite people to talk Star Trek with, is that before the series aired, you were really not very interested in it. I think you were not very optimistic in it being something that was going to connect with you personally. And then after it aired, your reaction to the first episode was very positive, and it seemed that they did connect with you. And when you look at social media in particular, and you see all the fervor leading up to the series and how excited people were, to the point where I felt like for most people, they were probably going to like whatever came on just because Picard was returning. You know, your experience was different. Yours was cautious going in, and then it was changed. So I'm really curious to hear why that happened for you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for me, it is very different, partly because myself, you know, I don't really like Discovery. And so, you know, I stopped watching Discovery midway through the first season, and it just, you know, never caught my interest. It never kept me in it. And I think with Picard, you know, and we started Literary Treks. So having all of that time with Picard moving through the literary universe, that's a story to which I hold dear to my heart, especially where they took Picard in that entire run, you know, after Nemesis. I think was pretty astounding where he comes as a character and how he grows as a character, and kind of he really evolves as a character. And so, you know, seeing that they were going to bring back Picard for this show, I mean, I knew that they wouldn't use anything from that. And so that made me
so
sad.
You knew they wouldn't use anything from that.
I mean, you were certain they
wouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't mean know like you had inside information, just know that like you were very confident.
No, it's not like, you know, yeah. It's not like I called Kirsten Beyer and she told me it was going to happen or anything. But I felt like what was going to happen was going to be the same thing that happened with Star Wars, which is we are going to disregard all of the books that we you know, did as we were always going to do. And for Star Trek, they always disregarded the books. Those were never things that they ever held as canon or anything. The only reason it had been such a big deal is that we had spent almost 20 years with those books as being the only place we got Picard and that crew and the 24th century, really, in general. But I had never had any thought that they would really go with any of that, which made me sad and obviously kind of trepidatious going in. And because they really haven't, you know, earned my trust with this new Trek coming out on CBS All Access, I was very reserved. You know, I'll see the episode and see how it goes. And I would say at least the first episode, Remembrance, did a good job of creating an interesting mystery, creating an interesting place for Picard to be, and enough that was like, okay, I want to give this a chance. So I think they did, especially with that first episode, they really did a great job of doing that for me. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I've continued watching it now through episode 5, and I'll watch through the end of the season. You know, it's hard with many of these shows, too, because so much of the time, everything's so locked in on, you know, this serialized nature of everything. You really have to take it a season at a time. So there's that, too. It's like, okay, well, I'm stuck in the middle of season 5 now, and so I've got to give them, hopefully, time to finish telling me this story, because these seasons tend to be one big, long story.
Yeah. I see. Very interesting. You know, unlike you, I have enjoyed Discovery, although I definitely have my issues with it. You know, the writing... We usually talk about Deep Space Nine on the Orb, and you know, compared with Deep Space Nine, the writing of Discovery has not been up to par for me, although there certainly are characters and moments and things about it that I like very much. And I do think that that core of Star Trek, the commentary and the relationships that needs to be there, is there, but sometimes it's obscured by the action and such that goes with it. Leading into Picard, I probably, like you, was sure that they weren't going to continue the storylines from the novels where Picard's life had gone, in particular because we saw in the trailers, apparently Beverly wasn't around. So
right.
Already right there, you know that they've gone in some other direction.
And already a knock against the series for me. You know how I feel about Beverly.
Yeah. And now who knows? You know, we might find out in season two or later that they actually did get married and then they got divorced. And who knows what might come into the series. But it certainly stands out that at this point in his life, Beverly's not even been mentioned at any point. One of my concerns going in, not for me personally, because I was open to whatever they did creatively. That's just how I feel about creative work. I was concerned that a large portion of the fan base that was over the top excited about Picard was going to turn on it the way that they turn on JJ or the way they turn on Discovery once it came out, because it seemed that so many people were so convinced in their minds, even though we were being told this is not going to be the next generation, it's going to be something different. In their minds, I felt like they were sure that it was going to be that familiar TNG that they love, and then when it wasn't, they were going to turn on it. And I think a few people have. I've seen some of that online, but not very much. I think most people have adapted to it, and I think that it is largely because of Patrick Stewart and the performance that he's given as Picard, and also the pacing of the story in the first three episodes felt a bit more grounded than what we've gotten in Discovery, and it maybe felt a little bit more familiar Star Trek-wise to people. I don't know if the show has continued that way. They're starting to lose me a little bit, which we'll talk about as we go along. But as for the premise of the show, I don't feel like, from the teasers that we got, that people were expecting a story that is essentially a follow-up to The Measure of a Man. And the premise of the show being Picard left Starfleet because Starfleet went in another direction, fell down on its responsibilities. They created synthetic life that turned on them, and now there's a ban on that. And they also were trying to help one of their oldest enemies. That's the basic premise of the story. How do you feel about that as a way of telling this next stage of Picard's life and of Starfleet's existence?
Yeah, this is an interesting part, because obviously the premise of this is kind of based off of Star Trek 09. Mm-hmm. And what we saw there with Spock and the fact that Romulus and his Remus are going to be destroyed. Now, they've gerrymandered that a little bit in the sense that it's not the Hobus star. It's actually the Romulan star. And we get the feeling like that may or may not actually have been an accident. So that's a part of the premise. Going to have, you know, Starfleet be so involved with saving the Romulans is not a bad thing. I think the premise is decent, but the problem is, for me, the premise itself seems somewhat flawed because there hasn't been enough information given.
Yeah.
And part of that is, okay, so what's going on with the Romulans in the first place? Like, why do we not get a sense of that they're doing any evacuations whatsoever? It's just Starfleet. Why is this all falling on Starfleet's shoulders, basically, to rescue 900 million people? Which, when you think about an empire like the Romulans, that's not a lot. What the heck is up with Spock and Red Matter, and why isn't that referenced anywhere? Because we know that happened in the Prime timeline. We saw it happen in 09. So that had to have happened somewhere. And so why is that not a part of the conversation about what they're going to do about this? And then you know, the more I've thought about the synthetics and creating them, it seems like the worst idea in the long, sad history of bad ideas to just create brand new synthetics, when isn't it much easier to just create hollow decks where you can have a very basic hologram do the work that you need to have them do? Like, it's so much easier to create a hollow emitter than it is to create an entirely new form of synthetic life.
Yeah.
And I'll say this too, all the way back in The Measure of Man, remember the whole conversation that Picard and Guinan have about the idea of slave labor? Yeah. Like, how is that not playing into anything here in this question? And then lastly, everything I hear about the Federation in this, and then like Una McCormick's book there, I don't want to talk too much about that because they'll talk about it in Literary Tracks and I don't want to steal their thunder, but
yeah.
Why is everybody in Starfleet and or the Federation seem like a racist, cold-hearted jerk these days? Like, this does not feel like the Federation of, I mean, even Deep Space Nine, which can be dark. You know, we have Home Front and Paradise Lost. We've got the Maquis storyline. We see bits and pieces of darkness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Section 31, you know, all those kind of things. But it never feels like it's epidemic across the entire Federation. But everything I see of this version of the Federation and Starfleet, is it really worth saving anyway? Because nobody seems to be living out any of the ideals except for Picard. He's like the one bastion of hope. And I mean, maybe that's, you know, the idea that the why Patrick Stewart wants to come out back, because he's the arbiter of all that is good and holy in the Star Trek universe these days. But those are just some like when you ask about the premise, it's like it's a big premise, but I feel like the premise seems to be not as well thought out of as I would have hoped it would have been.
Yeah. Well, Picard's not the only one. I'm sure we'll find out that the emergency ethics hologram still upholds the principles of the Federation.
Oh, well, I mean, that would be great. That would be excellent. I mean, that would be good to know.
So, okay, well, there's a lot to unpack here from what you shared. I mean, starting from your last point, this story, Una's book, which is excellent, and the upcoming third season of Discovery, from what we've seen so far, are all at their core commentaries on our present day. They're commentaries on Brexit. They're commentaries on the Trump administration. They're commentaries on the sort of the way that countries and governments around the world are turning their back on globalization and they're becoming insular. And, you know, science fiction has always been about social commentary, and Star Trek has been about social commentary. And so what we're seeing is modern day commentary on the current climate of the world. And that's the reason that these stories are taking the form that they're taking, as far as I see it. As far as the premise of the show, like you said, it's a big premise. And I think that is the problem. And again, when I say it's the problem, some people listening I know are so in love with Picard, they're going to be thinking, oh, Chris and Matthew keep saying it's a problem, it's a problem. We're not saying it's a problem like the show is bad. We're talking about creatively to convey the story that it feels like they want to tell. I think the problem is they have this very big premise and they've only given themselves 10 episodes. And for some reason, they've locked themselves right in there around that 42, 43 minute mark that we were getting towards the end of Star Trek on TV when Voyager was on. You know, the time started dwindling from the Next Generation to the end of Voyager and into Enterprise, and we were getting down to about 42, 43, and that's what we're seeing here. And I don't know exactly why they're doing that, because Discovery doesn't do that. There are episodes of Discovery that are an hour. And there have been a few that are like 38 minutes, but most of them are probably more in the 50-minute or so range. So I don't know why they don't take a little extra time, because they've got this story with Picard going on, and I think they did an excellent job of setting it up. And once they left Earth, things have started kind of feel like there are gaps that aren't being filled in. They're like jumping to these different spots in the story. And it's why I've said on Twitter, if you haven't read Una's book, and you're watching this show and you really want to feel like you understand more of the story that's going on, you need to read Una's book. And someone asked me, is it canon? You know, I don't want to read a book if it's not canon, because I've done that in the past and then they've changed things and then it felt like it didn't matter. My feeling is that this book is canon because it feels like it is meant to be in lockstep with these 10 episodes and to fill in the backstory that they don't have time to share on screen. So, Matthew, a lot of the questions that you asked about why haven't they explained this or why haven't they explained that, well, Una has, but then a question is, should viewers have to go read a book?
I mean, absolutely. And that's something, you know, John Mills and I talk about on Aggressive Negotiations, this idea, you know, in the Star Wars universe, you shouldn't feel like you have to read a book to understand the story. And I will say this, you know, I never felt like I needed to read a book in any of the other Star Treks that I've watched to get what's going on. Part of that has to do with what you talked about with episode number. You know, you have 26 episodes a season, 24 episodes a season. You have plenty of time to be able to tell these stories. You're not trying to tell stories, even Deep Space Nine, you're not trying to tell stories that are so interconnected that you have to be watching each episode in that specific sequence. And then, you know, when you think about how they were writing back then, it was more about, for them, okay, what are the story points that are hitting? What is going to make them for a more interesting character discussion or character story? And as they move forward, they continue to pull on those strings. But part of that is because they're spending so much time with these characters. And here, they're trying to do all that work up front in the writer's room. And I don't think it necessarily always works as well as it used to, because you just got more time to spend with what you're doing. And then on top of that, as good as Una's book was, again, a lot of the problems of the premise that I have still come out. And I'll say this, because you mentioned earlier that this is a referendum on what's going on in our world today. Mm-hmm. That's what science fiction is best at. But the thing that set Star Trek apart was that it was about a hopeful future. And I would say so far, Picard, there's nothing hopeful in it. It's lost that. And even Deep Space Nine, at its darkest, there was still always hope. And I think that's the problem that we're running into right now, is that we're so willing to throw away Gene Roddenberry's idea of an idealism, which, of course, I don't always agree with all of it anyway, but we're so willing to throw that away for a more modern sensibility. But I think that the reason that Star Trek lasted so long is because it gave us something hopeful to look forward to. Honestly, I watched Picard and I'm like, is this really a future that I want to live in? Because it really just seems like they've de-evolved by like a whole two centuries in Picard compared to when I would watch TNG and Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Heck, even Enterprise felt more evolved than a lot of what we're getting, I think, in Picard.
Yeah. I think one problem that is causing that, Picard comments on it in the first episode when he tells that reporter that you're a stranger to war, you're a stranger to history. And I think that we have a generation of younger writers and younger fans who, because of the years that they have been around, have not experienced some of the things that the writers who were writing those earlier Star Trek series experienced. And because they don't have those experiences, I feel like, first, they can't comment on them as much in the writing, certainly not from first-hand experience or having lived through those times. And this isn't the case for all the writers, because I know some of the writers are older. So it's not a blanket statement. This is an observation as a creative myself, just looking at what I'm seeing. This is how I feel. And also in some of the interactions and the dialogue that are coming from the fan base and sort of this new influx of fans into Star Trek who are also younger, I get the same feeling that there's a lack of historical perspective And I think that those earlier Star Trek series, and of course Gene Roddenberry's vision because of the time during which Star Trek was born, was looking for that hopeful future that the world is in strife and we must become better and we can become better and we can get to that future. I do think also that the news these days, I unfortunately have to be looped into the news very heavily all the time because of the nature of my job. It's very easy to kind of kill the optimism. There's this feeling that we've fallen so far down that maybe we can't get up and we can't get back to that place. And I think that that feeling also bleeds through in the writing. And I actually think that there is an appetite for that type of narrative among TV viewers today and among fans. And so the writers write it and the fans consume it. And it feeds this perpetual decline, or just, you know, we're treading water in a world that's falling apart. And we're not really building towards a better future like we were in earlier Star Trek. And I think Patrick Stewart, and I've read interviews that he's done, I think his reason in coming back was to try to break that cycle and restore some optimism. But like you said, I don't know if that's actually coming through as this first season of Picard unfolds.
Yeah, I mean, I would say cynicism is easy and lazy. And optimism and hope is difficult. And it's difficult to have hope when you're in a situation, I think, when we look at the world now. But I can't say that that's a world that's much worse than when Gene Roddenberry was originally writing Star Trek in the 60s or the 70s, you know, or even the 80s. Like, we have lost the historical perspective to say, oh, our times are either the best or the worst that they've ever been. It's the best of times. It's the worst of times. You know, we've been saying it since Dickens, right?
Yeah.
Everybody thinks their time is the best and our worst. And so the thing, again, about Star Trek that I think makes it special was to say, yes, it is going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. You're going to go through terrible times. But what you can get to if you put your mind to it, if you let go of cynicism, you let go of hate, you let go of all of these things, you can come to a better future by working together. And it was that hope that people would cling to. And I feel like if you want Picard especially to be the person that stands for that, I mean, again, it's difficult in this show when you do feel like he's the only one standing for that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else seems to be lost in the cynicism and can't see beyond their cynical noses. And so you have a hard time when there's nobody else there. And part of that in this, I think even the premise was, is what I would consider sort of a lazy reason for not bringing back other characters that could help that hope stay there, like that, you know, we would have a Riker and Troy and a, you know, a Worf and all these other characters, a Beverly and all that kind of stuff. Like, no, that there are still people that hold on to the truth of and the beauty of what the Federation's supposed to be, what Starfleet is supposed to be, and they're going to kind of like reawaken that, right? There will be there has been an awakening. Have you felt it? And that's still, it feels like that's what's needed in this Star Trek universe. But yeah, it's come so far away from what we know from TNG and the Next Generation, Voyager and whatnot. That's the other thing too. It's weird because the last time we saw this crew, it's only 20 years ago, and a lot has apparently gone down the toilet in the Federation in 20 years. It just seems strange that 300 years of history, with a snap of a finger, when you think about the time drop in the bucket that 20 years is in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, again, premise wise, it seems like a stretch to be able to tell the story you want to tell. And in many ways, it feels like this is a story that's not for Star Trek, because it just feels like many other versions of sci-fi that you get out there. And that's, it's not really a Star Trek story specifically to me. It feels just like a copy of like new Battlestar Galactica,
well,
stuff like that.
Yeah, and I've had the same thought. As far as the 300 years and then 20 years goes, I mean, that's a commentary. I think that's a warning, an attempted warning, that all this long history we've had as the United States and a democracy and all the progress that we've made can quickly go down in the course of a decade or two decades if we're not careful. I mean, I think that there's the timing is there. It's interesting that you mentioned Battlestar Galactica because, yeah, I mean, there's so many parallels. There's so many elements in here from Battlestar Galactica. You've got, you know, machines who don't know that they're machines, and no one can tell because they do seem perfectly human. There's a lot of Philip K. Dick. There's a lot of elements from all around science fiction that have been pulled into this one story.
But Picard wouldn't know because he doesn't really like science fiction. He never really
got
it.
Yeah, he's not really into it, especially Asimov. You know, he never really got it. I actually like that line. I thought it was cute that Captain Picard just didn't really get science fiction, you know? But yeah, they are pulling a lot of elements, and it doesn't really bother me. You know, I'm not one of those fans that's out there shouting like, oh my God, you know, you're ripping off this show and you're ripping off this show, because they're just science fiction ideas, and that's where technology may go.
Well,
that's
and
all fine.
I don't have an issue with them utilizing other things. I think more importantly to me is every universe has its own rules that you've created, its own kind of like set of guidelines, which makes it that thing and differentiates it from another thing, you know? So Star Trek definitely has those. And unfortunately, you have 700 hours worth of Star Trek you have to contend with, having already set the template for what Star Trek is and is not. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think just when I think through some of these things, it's almost as though they regret the fact that Star Trek has some of these things, and they're trying really hard to make this feel like modern and cool and all those things, when it's Star Trek being modern and cool wasn't what made it the thing that we held on to.
Yeah.
And this is why the original series can last. It's because people can still watch that and feel the hope and optimism for the future, even if some of the things we watch now, oh, that's kind of silly, or maybe that's a little bit outdated now because it's not the 60s anymore. But it's still, there's a key component there that really carries through. And I don't know if that key component is necessarily leaking through at this moment with Picard. But I was thinking about this, is we've been talking about all this. Basically, we've kind of been talking about the this one section about Picard. But there's a whole other side of this premise that I wanted to ask you about, because
okay,
we get the whole like Romulan side of this with this Borg cube artifact thing. Like, that's the whole other side of this premise, which, how is that working for you?
It's really not.
Okay.
I'm interested to see where it goes, and they've created some interesting mysteries, but I'm having trouble seeing how they're going to unravel these mysteries. So either this is a story that's going to carry through to season two, which I don't think is the case, because they've set a precedent with Discovery that they do one story a season. So I had the feeling they're going to do that here. Or they're going to somehow try to wrap this up within one season. And I don't know, because you've got this Borg cube. You've got these people who are salvaging Borg implants, presumably to sell on the black market, or they're doing something with them. From the latest episode, now
I've always
wanted
a Borg hip. You know, they last forever.
They do. I mean, and you can do all kinds of crazy athletic things with a Borg hip. You know, in the latest episode, we got a little bit more information about some of the connections going on and people salvaging these Borg parts, but it's not clear why they're doing that. And that doesn't seem to have anything to do with the whole Narek, Rizzo pursuing these synthetic life forms like Daj and Soji and wanting to kill them all. I can understand that they want to kill them all, because it's been established that this group of Romulans hates synthetic life, and so they want to eradicate it. That's a very straightforward premise. But you've got that going on this cube at the same time that you've got this Borg implant salvaging operation going on. How are those connected? And even if they are, can you connect all of those dots in a way that makes sense and is satisfying for the viewer in 5 episodes that are remaining in the season? I don't understand. And it's so disconnected from what's happening with Picard and his crew. That's why I said at the beginning, they're trying to tell a story that will not fit into 10 episodes. And it's leaving me, I'm very interested in it. And I like the show. I love the cast. The performances have been great. And until the whole opening of this week's episode, Stardust City Rag, which made me quite angry, except for that, up until then, I've been really, really enjoying everything that's going on. But at the same time, I'm feeling like this Borg thing doesn't really make sense. The cynic in me feels like the whole Borg element of it was created just so they could bring Jerry Ryan back. And then they also decided, oh, why don't we bring Jonathan Delarco back as Hugh as well, because he has a connection to Picard, and that way we can bring Borg on. And I thought, well, yeah, but they wouldn't do that. Like, I'm sure that Seven's going to have a bigger role. And perhaps she is going to have a bigger role as the season plays out. But I will say that after watching her appearance at the end of Absolute Candor, and then watching her story, and then she leaves at the end of Stardust City Rag, I feel even more like, okay, they just wanted to bring Seven on because, hey, there's a connection to Voyager and people like this character. And I really hate to say that because I love Seven. I think she was one of the best characters on Voyager, and Jerry Ryan did a phenomenal job with that character. But if we're talking about the Borg element of this story and how it fits into the overall story that they're telling and whether it makes sense right now, I'm not really happy with how things are progressing.
Well, and so it creates a huge question too. If the Romulans are so diametrically opposed to synthetic life, why are they studying the Borg in the first place? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, that's why I feel like those two parts of the story aren't connected.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and then, okay, so there's a secreter police for the Romulans. There's a secreter police that are apparently the Jot Vaj, and their secret, get this, the secret that will melt your brain, Chris, is just this, which I don't know how this melts your brain or not, but the secret is they don't like synthetic life, and they do everything they can to destroy it. So basically, they're Romulan Blade Runners. And
right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that part doesn't really make sense. So you put those things together and it's like, what is going on with this story? And the other thing that you don't understand is that there's this whole mystery then surrounding the fact that this Borg cube, that the last thing that happened to this Borg cube is they assimilated this Romulan ship, and then the submatrix goes kapooey because of something wrong with these Romulans. And it just, it again, like, all of this is not making a ton of sense yet. Now, obviously, there's still 5 episodes to go, but I have some real questions about the actual premise of this, which is, it doesn't make sense for Romulans to care about the Borg at all when they don't like AI. It makes more sense for them to have totally destroyed. Not only that, but how in the world is Hugh, the leader of the reclamation project on the artifact, in Romulan space? He's not Romulan. they mentioned that he says to him, to Soji, that these are the only Romulans they know of that have been assimilated. That's not true. We know that from Voyager. There's a Romulan in Voyager that we meet that used to be a part of the collective. So, there's just a... Again, this is one of those things, like, they're putting all this together, and it just doesn't think like somebody who's really thought all of this out very well. And part of that, you know, I think all the mysteries we were talking about on the other side of the premise with Picard himself, you put all of these other questions. It's like they're just asking too many questions for one season. I think that's one of the biggest issues. There's just too much they're trying to cram in at one time.
Yeah, that's my feeling as well. I hope it all comes together because I certainly do want the show to be successful, and I have been enjoying the show a lot more than I have been enjoying Discovery, and it's been wonderful to see Patrick Stewart back. And as I tweeted recently, about a week ago, I think that it's astonishing how many talented actors they have brought together for this show, because there are wonderful performances and wonderful characters on here. So, okay, let's move away from the premise and let's talk about these characters for a little bit. I know we've probably sound like we're pretty down on the show, which at least I'm not. Actually, I'm not down on the show, but I would like for the elements to fit together a little bit better. Two of the first characters that we meet that we're unfamiliar with are Laris and Jaban. And these are the Romulans, who are the Tal Shiar agents. If you read the Countdown comics before the show aired, then you already had met Laris and Jaban. I think these are two of the most delightful characters that have been created for Star Trek in a long time. How do you feel about them?
I absolutely agree. I think that they have really been wonderful. Both of them are fantastic. Their repartee with Patrick Stewart is fantastic. They have a real ease with him. It's a lot of fun. I love how Laris also is, she has an Irish accent, which is kind of weird coming from a Romulan. She's a Northerner.
Well, she's a Southerner, so, you know. So
yeah, he's the Northerner, which is weird. Yeah. Anyway, so I do love that. But just as characters, they are a lot of fun. They add some interesting, you know, humanity to Picard, of being the people mm-hmm. who care about him. It's interesting to me, too, and it just seems strange a little bit that they're the ones who are the kind of the constants in Picard's life when, you know, it's not like he doesn't have other friends. So it is a little strange to me that up till episode 5, we have not seen any of the other crew members. Even just calling Picard, you know, like it just seems like that the people that he spent most of his adult life with would be more a part of his life. But I think that they have been very fun characters, and it honestly saddened me that they left Earth and that they weren't with him anymore, because they were one of my favorite parts of the show, and now they're not there. And it's like there is kind of something that's missing, because they had created that nice dynamic in those first 3 episodes, and now they're not there. And it's like, well, that stinks.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they will turn up again before the end because of their Tal Shiar connection, and Picard might need their expertise again near the end of the story as he unravels things. But I want a spinoff series, since apparently now we just create new Star Trek series for every idea. Pretty soon we're going to have like 12 Star Trek series on at once. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to have a spinoff series of Laris and Jaban and Number One. It's just everything that happens at the Vineyard while Picard's away. That would be a wonderful show. One thing that you mentioned, humanity, they bring humanity back to Picard. One reason I love these characters is that they're Romulans. Not only are they Romulans, but they're Tal Shiar. And one of the premises of this show, one of the points that Picard is trying to make in his interview, and one of the points that Patrick Stewart wanted to make in coming back, he has said, I think is reflected in this relationship between Picard and these two Romulans. They really respect each other. They respect him greatly because he worked so hard to save Romulans, but I think it goes deeper than that. I think it's not just that he helped their people. I think that they personally feel a very strong affinity for him, and I think it goes the other way as well. You can tell that they are extremely important to him, and as we see in the world today, like a resurgence of tribalism, I think this message that a human and these Romulans can come together and have such a close relationship is an important message. And I really like this part of the show, and I really like these two characters and the actors. It just, the way they convey the fact that these two characters have this long relationship with Picard and have this care for him in the first episode of a new series, I thought was really quite phenomenal.
Yeah, there's a part of me, you know, you live in Japan, and I was just thinking about how the relationship between the United States and Japan is totally different than it was 60 years ago when we were at war. And the way that that has changed is because we have worked very diligently with our governments and our peoples to find and forge a new relationship. That took a lot of work. But I think there's a real beauty in that, and both of our countries have reaped the benefits of us being such close allies now and friends, and generally a country that we look at, and we people don't even think about that anymore.
Right.
And so I think there's that. That's the kind of thing, you know, that you know, obviously Picard is trying to get at with the Romulans, and in many ways, I feel like, you know, almost the Romulans kind of being a, at least in the Picard series, almost our struggling relationship with Russia, you know, like and it's like we just don't, you know, we could have become friends, but we still really, I mean, we really haven't, and there's still this antagonism we have towards one another. And, you know, I think I love that Laris and Savan are these characters that we see that it takes getting to know people to really make a judgment on who they are. And that's you know, that's classic Star Trek. And in that way, they have done a fantastic job of allowing it to be. That's a classic Star Trek message. And I think those two characters really portray that. And again, that's one of the reasons I just wish that they were there even on the ship with Picard, because I think that brings out the Star Trekiness of the show.
Well, it does take time to get to know someone before you can make a judgment, unless you're number one. And then you can quickly determine if someone's dangerous or not. As
and he did not do such a good
Dodge.
Job. He did.
Well, that's actually maybe a little bit true.
You know, because I got to say, you know, Agnes is, she's not such good news. So.
Oh, Agnes. Okay, we'll talk about her in a minute. Let's talk about the person that number one did think was okay, which was Dodge. So how do you feel about Dodge and Soji?
I mean, they're just, I would say both of them seem to be very bland characters right now. There's not a lot to them. And really, they're kind of our MacGuffin for the show. It was very strange to me to introduce her at the end of the, you know, and then like her and Narek immediately have this relationship now already. It seems like all of, so much of the show, it feels like it's either gone too fast or too slow.
Yeah,
it's like they can't find the right speed to go at. And that's something where it felt like, wow, that just went really quick that they're like they just met and now they're already in this, you know, romantic relationship and everything. No. It just seemed to be an interesting, strange, weird contrivance. So
that's a side effect of the 10 episode format, because they don't have time to establish the characters and let them form a relationship. They have to just throw them right in. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't have a ton to say about them because I don't feel like they've really been given a ton to do. And that's kind of that's interesting. And again, they're more the MacGuffin of the show than they are anything else at this point.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of thoughts on them either. I do think that Dodge's interactions with Picard were really important for Picard's character. And as for what's happening with Soji, I think we're going to find out more about her that's going to make the character make more sense. I do think that she's an important, very important element to this whole android synthetics Maddox storyline that's coming out. I have enjoyed the performances, but the character, I just feel like the story is Picard and this crew that he's assembled. And then occasionally we go to the artifact and we get given a little taste of this other stuff that's going on. And then we slide around in our socks for a little bit. And then we go back to the real story, which is Picard and what's going on. The balance isn't quite there. And when they shift, it feels like if you're going down the highway and you like throw your car into reverse suddenly, and then you put it back into proper gear. Like it's this very jerky shifting back and forth between the elements right now.
Well, I mean, what we're going to have happen, though, is that actually at the end of the season, we will find out that the most pivotal scene that has happened in the show so far will have been sock sliding.
Sock sliding, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be the sock sliding rag.
You're probably right. Or at the end of the season, we'll find out that actually it was Michael Burnham who saved everyone.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, she just hopped over from the future. She's, what, 900 years in the future or whatever. So, yeah, she's back to save the day. Thank goodness.
Well, she already knows what happens, so it's easy for her to resolve it. So, anyway.
It's a whole time travel conundrum, but she's able to do it because she's Michael Burnham.
Yeah. Kidding, people. Kidding. There's Narek and his sister, Rizzo, and every time I hear Rizzo, the first time when Commodore O, the apparent Romulan...
Right, she's the apparent Romulan. Definitely a Romulan plant.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you rise to the rank of Commodore as a Romulan. I assume she's been passing herself off as a Vulcan all this time, and I guess she's not a northerner, so she doesn't have the, you know, head ridge up there. But she's either Romulan or she's half Romulan, or she works for the Romulans, or she's been cosmetically altered or something. But anyway, the first time she called in Rizzo, immediate thing that went off into my head was Rizzo the Rat from The Muppet Show.
Yes, yes. Thanks for making me a part of this.
I'm like, Rizzo? I'm thinking, like, who is naming these characters? We've got Commodore O, who's supposed to be a Vulcan, who's probably a Romulan, who has a Japanese surname. I think it's also a Korean surname. I don't know where that name came from. And then you've got Rizzo. Okay. So, but anyway, names aside, the Rizzo character, now that she's gotten over to the artifact and she's back in her normal Romulan pointy ear look, whatever's going on with her and her brother is a bit bizarre. I don't know if they're actually siblings. I hope they're not actually siblings. Of course, we don't know a lot about Romulan familial relations, so who knows? Maybe this is not uncommon for Romulans.
I mean, I like to think of them as the Lannisters of the Star Trek universe, you know? So if you've ever seen Game of Thrones, the Lannisters, you know, the famous brother-sister couple. So yes, it's really awkward. I'm not really sure why we're going this route with Star Trek into the Game of Thrones. Look, I know this is an M-rated show, but I don't really know if Star Trek needs to be that M-rated.
Yeah.
It's weird, it's creepy, and it doesn't make a lot of sense right now for them to be implying that these are brother and sister, and yet for some reason I get the feeling like she wants it to be more than that, or it has been more than that. I don't know. It's just super creepy, and it's not what honestly, look, you can write me letters, it's fine, but I just don't think it deserves to be in Star Trek. I just don't think it needs to be in Star Trek.
Yeah, like, if it were the central point of a story and they wanted to make a point about something in the writing and this were necessary for them to get to that point, that would be one thing. But within the story that we're seeing right now, this little element that keeps getting thrown in does not make any sense. It doesn't need to be there. If you remove it, this is the thing. Okay, look, I'm an editor. My job is editing. If you remove something and it doesn't change the story, then it's not necessary. Now, that's not to say you shouldn't throw some things in creative writing sometimes that are just there to add color. Yeah, that's fine. However, if something truly is not needed for the story and it's distracting from the story, as this element is, then why is it there? That's what I don't quite understand. Narek is a character not really working for me right now.
You don't like the sexy, sultry bad boy of the Romulan Empire?
Oh, I guess, but I don't know. Sometimes I think of, like, if he's the sultry bad boy, it's kind of like if Ross from Friends were the bad boy, like he's trying to be cool. I don't get it.
He really likes leather pants, too, so...
I that's true. Something there. And his sister Rizzo, like, I don't know enough about her to have any opinion. The idea that there would be a Romulan who has been planted in Starfleet and cosmetically altered to look human, I mean, that's not new. I mean, we've had people go undercover in the past, but that's fine. I mean, that story element, no problem there. I don't know what her connection is here. It just feels like there's another element to this story. Well, she's part of the group. She and Narek are part of the group. The Jat Vash, which if we want to look for like really deep connections, like some people said, oh, the five queens that Data puts down on the table must mean Q is going to appear later in the season. No, Q is not going to appear later in the season, but maybe Vash is. It's the Jat Vash. Maybe Vash uncovered something in one of her archaeological expeditions that caused everyone to be on Romulus to be scared of synthetic life. I don't know. You know, well, she was with Q, so maybe she was thrown back in the past, and that's why they're older than the Tal Shiar.
It just seems like they're going towards this idea that the Romulans in the past, because apparently the Jat Vash has existed for thousands of years, that yeah. They're the ones who created the Borg. Like, instead of it being a destiny event like okay. that it's going to be the Romulans that are responsible, and it's like, okay.
Okay, I had not thought of that, but you could be right, and I certainly hope that's not where they're going. Because that would, once again, really change kind of the foundation of one of the best known and best loved enemies in Star Trek, meaning the Borg. And it would also, I guess, change how we think of the Romulans as well. So I hope that's not it. All right, Jurati. We'll talk about Jurati for a minute. I liked her quite a lot when we first met her. When Picard goes to the Daystrom Institute, in a couple of ways, it was kind of fun that there's someone who doesn't like look up to Picard, like, oh my God, Admiral Picard is here. It's more like, I really wish you had come here on my day off. You know, I really don't want to talk to you about this. But she was an interesting character, and I think she's been pretty interesting most of the way through. We were talking earlier about how you need to read Una's book to really understand what's going on in this story. And very slight spoiler alert right here. I don't think it's really a spoiler, but did you feel, Matthew, that the interaction between Jurati and Maddox at the end of Stardust City Rag didn't quite make sense? Based on what we've seen on screen, yeah. It made perfect sense to me because I've read the book. So I know their backstory, but if you didn't know that, how do you read that scene?
Yeah, so rewatching the episodes, it seemed pretty clear to me that in light of what happens at the end of the fifth episode, that the whole thing is a setup for her to be there. Like, she's been a bad person the whole time. It's you know... we saw her talking with O, and then, you know, we know that O is involved with the people who had been searching for Daj in the first place. So she's working with the Jat Vash or whoever they are, these Romulan infiltrators. They get sent specifically just to Picard's house at that moment, just so Jurati can come in and save the day and earn Picard's favor again. You know, like, Picard's being played like a fiddle in this show in many ways, and Jurati is just part of that. And, you know, her words to Maddox are definitely, you know, she she has been won over with whatever she has seen when it comes to AI and you know, mm-hmm. these android synthetics, you know, this cybernetic life, all these things. Like, she seems to be on the side of the devils instead of the angels here now. And I think it's not necessarily surprising, especially rewatching it. It's like, oh yeah, I'm seeing where they were already placing all those things for her to not be a good guy. So I'll be interested again to see where she goes as a character. Yeah, I like Allison Pill. I mean, she's fantastic. She was great in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Mm-hmm. But I will say, too, it was one more place where it was just like one more mystery layered on in episode 5. And I was like, we don't really need more mysteries layered on. So, I'm of mixed feelings about her, I guess, as a character in the storyline as it progresses now. Because this whole thing was all about finding Maddox, right? First half of the season's all been about that. And now he's already gone. And it's like, okay, so what do we do? It just seems like we spent a lot of time on that, and now it doesn't really matter anymore because he's already dead.
Yeah, I don't quite see it that way, because I think that, yeah, finding Maddox was important, but I think finding out who is trying to kill, who killed Dodge, and who's probably trying to kill Soji, and why these Romulans want to eradicate synthetic life is probably the bigger goal that we'll get to.
Right.
So, okay, so the way you read that scene, I think that is the way that you would read that scene just based on what we've seen on screen in the story. But, and you're probably right about many elements of that. I do think that she was shown something that really frightened her, that made her disappointed in Maddox, that really impacted her. I'm not so sure that I believe that she was always in cahoots with O and this Romulan infiltration and such, because for one thing, when O walks up to her with her, you know, Ray-Ban Men in Black sunglasses on, she says, "Commander O, Starfleet security or intelligence." I have to go back and see what it is.
Right.
So
that's what I'm saying. Like, she was always, but I'm saying when she joins the party to go on the trip with them.
So at that
she's been converted to being, you know, part of the dark side.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. But before that, so when I was watching Remembrance, the first episode, when she's talking about Maddox to Picard, I'm thinking, like, she seems overly enamored with Bruce Maddox.
Yes.
But there's not much else on screen about that. After, you just get the feeling like she really thinks highly of him. But this is the slight spoiler alert part. You do learn in Una's book that the two of them had a relationship. And that's why the way I read that scene at the end of Stardust City Rag is a little bit different. She may have been sent to assassinate Maddox, but I think there's a personal relationship element that's playing into it, and a disappointment in him, and that their personal history plays into the decision at the end. And that is something that can't possibly, if that is part of the intention of the story, that can't come through with what we've seen on screen, because they're having to rush through the story so much because they've only given themselves 10 episodes. And I think that makes for a richer story than simply Girardi being shown something and then being sent on a mission to assassinate Maddox. You know, I've seen the chatter on Twitter about, oh, I think Girardi's a double agent. And I just think that's very simplistic writing. And if it's just, hey, we've got a double agent, Rizzo's a double agent, Girardi's a double agent, you know, are we going to have the emergency double agent hologram pop up at some point? Maybe. It's just one of those elements where I think the writers are better than what we're seeing on screen because they're trying to cram too much in and the story's being stretched too thin. That's sort of the heart of my feeling about this particular moment in the story.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I just don't know. I guess, and this is one of the areas where I feel like, obviously, once we get to the end of the season, we can better judge.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah. What about Raffi? Now, Raffi, I think, has been a great character, and in part because it's refreshing, actually, to see someone, especially someone who was Picard's first officer, who was a Starfleet officer, who has this relationship with Picard that's just so different than what we've seen in the past, because there's always been this reverence for Picard. And I just mentioned that, you know, Girardi didn't have that, but Girardi is a scientist. It's a bit different. Raffi and Picard served together for a long time and played a key role in the mission that ultimately led to the events of the show that we're watching.
I will say this character has been a mixed bag for me, and part of that has to do with, I think it's because of her portrayal in Una's book made her worse than better. And it's not Una's fault. It's just it's the story that she had been given to tell about her, and she just seems to be this character who she went out on this mission and then never paid attention to her family. You know, she literally just up and left them and does not seem to do anything to try and really stay in contact with them well, it's hard for me to really have sympathy for her as a character when all of the things that are wrong with her are really just the result of her actions. And I think you need to be able to have a little bit more sympathy with a character. Now, again, part of, you know, being somebody whose life has been marked by bad decisions that I have made and having to deal with the ramifications of those, you know, Raffi is that character. Like, we see her continually making bad decisions when it comes to her family, when it comes to her own health, when it comes to her mental state, you know, with what she's doing to her body. You know, all that stuff is just not good. And then I did not like when Picard went to visit her and she implied that, oh, you live in your lofty ivory tower and I live in my hovel. And I'm thinking to myself, where you live looks really nice, really secluded, and you're choosing to live there too. This is the Federation and this is Earth. This is paradise. Nobody has to live in a way that they don't want to. You're choosing to do this and you're just blaming Picard or putting on him. And it seems like a really strange thing to be saying when we know that Earth, we've been told many times in TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, you know, Earth is paradise. You know, Earth is perfection these days. So if you choose to live basically a life as she is, that is your choice. You don't have to live like that.
Well, plus, you know, that land that she lives on, that spot of real estate she has, that was used in Star Trek many times. So that must be worth a lot of money. I mean, she probably had to pay like a prime price for that lot.
Well, Picard wouldn't know because he doesn't really like sci-fi, so.
Plus, you got Gorn eggs laying around everywhere. Have a nice Gorn omelet.
It's great.
In the morning.
It's a nice Gorn omelet, so good.
But, I mean, you're right. Like you said earlier, the Star Trek universe, it has a certain framework, a certain foundation, a certain set of parameters that have been established that make it what it is and make it distinct from other franchises. And yeah, it's been established that Earth is a paradise and people on Earth don't go in need. Mm-hmm. And this is a case where I think that it was probably done this way to establish the difference between the two of them, the difference in directions that their life took after that scene 14 years earlier where they have to leave Starfleet, and also to just kind of create a bit of tension and conflict between the two of them, which in general in movies or in storytelling would be fine and it would make sense. It just doesn't fit with what we have already established about the environment in which they're living.
Well, and this is the problem I have with the character is that basically she's Starbuck from New Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. She's the same type of character. Like, you know, she kind of does her own thing. You know, she gets herself into trouble all the time. You know, she's really living off the repercussions of her own actions and everything. Likes to blame it on other people, not take responsibility for her actions. And Picard's not perfect in this. Obviously, he did not go see her. You know, we see that. But again, it just the character for me is a mixed bag so far. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see where she goes next because, you know, her confrontation with her son, you know, her son reminds her of all the awful things that she did to him and his father by basically abandoning them and becoming a stranger to them. So I'm hopeful that what we'll see next is not her going down some sort of shame spiral, but actually doing the Star Trek thing, which is to, as Picard said many a times, to work to make yourself better. Mm-hmm. And so it would be nice to see her do that now with actually Picard's help, actually ask for help.
Yeah. And I think that is likely where they're going to go with the character. I don't know if I'd be surprised, but I think that's where they're going to go with the character. I don't think they're going to have her go into a spiral and just keep going down. I certainly hope not. But I am enjoying the character. My life's not been as extreme as some of the things there, but relations with family, like you said, bad choices that we've made. We both have had this experience. Personal health, things, you know, that I do as a result of stress and trying to cope with decisions that I've made in my life. You know, I can identify on many levels with Raffi, and I think Michelle Hurd's performance has been excellent, and so I am enjoying the character. The other character I want to talk about is Rios. This character, again, a bit different from something we've got in Star Trek before, but I am enjoying the character, and I am particularly enjoying the holograms. And one thing I particularly enjoy about this character and the holograms is the versatility of Santiago Cabrera playing all of these, because they're all an extension of Rios. I think there's something there in the commentary by the fact that he has made all of his holograms look like himself. You know, they are reflecting different aspects of his personality, possibly things he doesn't like about himself, like when he says, "I hate that hospitality hologram." You've got all these different flavors of himself, and the acting, the versatility in the acting within scenes where he's interacting with himself as a completely different character has been really delightful for me. And it's the show needs a light touch here and there. And I think that these holograms have probably been the most effective at giving us that kind of light touch. And it's not so silly. It's not so ridiculous. And it's also a nice little progression of Star Trek technology, going from the Doctor and Voyager and seeing how over the course of 20 years, this technology has been expanded into other areas.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, he's reading that book about existentialism and living with the idea of death, you know, and so the holograms are basically a visual illustration of his existential crisis, which is funny. I think it's interesting to see him be a character in Star Trek who was a part of Starfleet, who had a very interesting life apparently in Starfleet, watched his captain die, and found a way to get himself out of that, and now is a ship for hire, you know, and he's a guy who apparently likes a good fight, he likes a good drink, and he likes a cigar, and he enjoys reading philosophy, you know. So, and the best argument between him and the EMH was the one where he's like, "Don't give me any more of your Sunday school morality," and he's like, "Well, I've had enough of your teenage goth existentialism, you know, like, just the back and forth there was really funny, but it's so true because he kind of is that character. Like, he's this brooding existentialist who thinks he's, you know, just so deep because he thinks about death all the time. And really, he's just being a turd. And so he needs to stop, in some ways, taking things so seriously all the time and learn to live again. And I think that's what will be interesting about this series for him. And to me, I think he probably makes him my favorite character on the show because I think Picard is going to have a huge impact on who he will be and who he will find himself becoming. I think a part of him is going to be reawakened spending time with Picard and remembering that he used to believe in things and he used to be somebody who lived for more than just himself. And so I'm excited to actually see that play out. And I think next to probably Stewart himself and Laris and Zavon, he's the best actor in the show. He's just so like laissez-faire, and it's just perfect because it's exactly who the character is supposed to be.
Yeah, he's been delightful. I have loved it. So last character that we should probably talk about, although we've already talked about her a bit, is Seven. And the use of Seven in the show, which, of course, we really just got this past week. What thoughts do you have on it?
Oh, I mean, obviously, it's very interesting that Seven has basically turned into Batman / Aragorn. So that's fascinating.
Batagorn.
Yeah, Batagorn. So, I mean, she's this ranger, you know, she basically like the Rangers from the North and Lord of the Rings. So is rewatching this episode, I was trying to connect the Seven we got in Voyager coming home to the Seven we see there and this choice that she makes to be a ranger, to help try and keep law and order. And unless they give us some sort of other backstory for her in book or something, I just can't make the connection of this character being what she was at the end of Voyager to hear. It seems like a massive jump. And obviously, 20 years of a person's existence is a lot, but it feels like a very big leap to be where she was then to now. So I don't want to say that it doesn't work, but it just seems strange. Her relationship with the Borg dealer is very interesting too. The fact that they apparently had some very close relationship. We're not really privy to exactly how close, but you get the feeling like it might have been, you know, an actual relationship just so that she could get out of Seven, you know, where more Borg people like Icheb were. And so you can understand the betrayal there and everything and why she would want revenge and all that. Again, Seven just seems to have been a character where I could get there intellectually if I knew more of the story, but to just plop her in there and that be the character that we get, it seems a little odd. So I'm hoping we'll get more with her and kind of flesh that whole story out. But I love Jeri Ryan. I've always loved Seven of Nine. And I thought, like you, she was one of the better characters in Voyager, especially since she's one of the characters they spent time actually writing for in that show.
But they wrote her well, and she
absolutely
delivered the material really well. I think in many senses, Jeri Ryan saved Voyager because, and I liked Kes just fine, but that show got a lot better, and Janeway's character got better after Jeri Ryan joined the show.
Yeah.
So, Seven is a wonderful character, but I'm with you. This is not the Seven I was expecting at all. This storyline that she had in this episode, and the fact that she appears, you know, she's this Fenris Ranger, and she just happens to come in and rescue Picard's ship, and then she gets beamed over, and it just wasn't what I was expecting based on the little glimpse of her that we saw in the teaser trailers before the series started. And as you said, if a lot can happen to you in 20 years. And it's perfectly plausible that things have happened in her life that have led her from what we knew of her at the end of Voyager to where she is now. But none of that has been even hinted at. And the whole ridiculously grotesque, unnecessary eye-gouging opening to this Stardust City rag with Icheb, I know it was meant to establish how the torture of Icheb and her having to kill him out of mercy impacted her emotionally. I get all of that. But even that, should that drive her to become one of these rangers and to live this life that she describes to Picard? I don't know. I think even that's a bit of a stretch. It's clearly an emotional moment for her. Yes, something like that could change the direction of your life. But is it an explanation that ties the last time we saw Seven to this time together? In that sense, I don't think so.
Well, and you mentioned something there that I think, you know, you talked about earlier, but there's this maturity level for Star Trek in this series. And I've had arguments with people about this on Twitter, because that's what Twitter's for these days, but...
Yeah. Well, that and Trek-splaining.
Star Trek has always been something that has dealt with very mature themes, but Star Trek was always a show for families. Like, everybody I knew grew up on Star Trek as a kid. And so the fact that you wouldn't want to show the Star Trek series to a kid bothers me greatly. And part of that is the violence that's in there. Part of that is just the unnecessariness of the adult language that we have in the show, because it doesn't add anything to the show. Star Trek never needed adult language like that to be a better show. Here, it's just done for shock factor and to try and be cool and edgy. And that's not a good reason to do something. And I would say this, it makes the people in this Star Trek show sound way too modern. And again, in a bad way, it makes them feel more de-evolved, as we were talking about earlier.
Exactly.
Instead of them being people that have evolved past the need to only use four-letter words every 5 minutes. Like when she says the absolute effing hubris, like it just is so forced. It just doesn't work. And so I think to me, that's the thing. Another thing about this show that has not completely sat well with me is the sense that, you know, as I was a parent, I would not want my kids to be watching this show because it is not for children. And that scene, like you mentioned at the opening of Stardust City Rag, it did not need to be that violent for us to understand, or gory or anything like that, to understand what's going on and to get the emotion of it for Seven. Because Seven coming in with Icheb alone and seeing what she mentioned, like that was her son. You know, like we get that. We've all seen Voyager. We understand that emotion. So, yeah, I 100% agree. And I think this is another place where we're trying to do something just to be cool instead of because it really is needed for the show.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good reason to do something in a show.
Yeah. And that scene, it's the first time, and it's very personal for me. And people who listen to this show and people who follow me on Twitter, who actually know me, not the random people who hop in and hijack conversations so they can Trek-splain to you, they know my history. They know that I've had 5 eye surgeries. And during those surgeries, I have to lie awake on a table for 3 hours while my eye is cut open. And so obviously this scene had a strong emotional impact on me that was unique to me, of course, and I get that. And yet, when I mention it online, I get attacked by other Star Trek fans, one of whom told me to grow up and boo-hoo and grow a pair, and oh, boo-hoo, you had eye surgery. The fact that that is what our fandom has become is truly sad and disappointing. But I'm not going to harp on that right now. I already went on my rant about it on Twitter. But as for this scene, they really don't need to show any blood for this scene to have the emotional impact on the character that's needed for the story. But if they do want to have a little bit of blood, show 2 seconds. Show 3 seconds and keep it tasteful, subtle, artistic. Your audience is smart. Star Trek fans are smart. They're going to understand what you're trying to establish creatively. And what they did was unnecessary and it was wrong. And I saw Chabon justify it in a tweet or a Facebook post. I saw a screenshot of it that was shared on Twitter. And he talked about how it was a group decision and that they felt it was necessary. It was not necessary. And I'm very disappointed. And everyone involved creatively here, because it just, it was not how you tell a Star Trek story. And I don't think that Star Trek has to always be squeaky clean. And I don't think that the Star Trek future is one in which everyone is ethical and everyone is moral.
Right.
And no one ever does anything bad and there aren't any bad people. I had someone Trek-splain that to me yesterday. And I never said anything like that. And we don't see that kind of stuff on screen so much in Star Trek. But obviously, yeah, it's the universe is chaotic. The galaxy is chaotic. There are always going to be people like that. We know that. Right. We're intelligent. It doesn't mean that you show like extended, long scenes of extremely graphic gore. That's just done for shock. And that
right.
is not what we need to have if we're going to tell good, effective Star Trek stories.
And I think, too, you can look at Star Trek that came before, especially with TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, all of those shows were working under the rules and regulations of the FCC. And so they are limited as to what they can do. But I think the creativeness of getting around those things to tell the stories you need to tell, obviously Deep Space Nine did. And again, Deep Space Nine does this so well. It shows you how to be a slightly more realistic and darker Star Trek show by dealing with some of the nitty gritty of what it's like to truly live in this universe, but without having to go to the nth degree of actually just blatantly showing it to you. I always think back to Mad Men. It was a show that was meant to be on HBO, but HBO didn't pick it up. Mm-hmm. And so it was on AMC, and AMC was basic cable. So there were things you couldn't do on there. But because of that, they had to be more creative in their storytelling. And I think it was a better show because they weren't just able to show explicit sex scenes and those kind of things that you can do on like an HBO. And it actually made for just a better show because the show was then more about the characters and what they're going mm-hmm. through and who they are as people than it is about this other content that which is just mainly done for kind of shock value in many places. And so this is a shock value thing that, again, I don't think is necessarily for actually telling the story. And the reason I say that is because Deep Space Nine was very effective in giving us even torture scenes. Like, remember when Garak is torturing Odo? Mm-hmm. Like, it's very effective there. And we saw gore and stuff, you know, with the Borg in Star Trek First Contact, right? But again, being PG-13 and being rated R, there's a big difference there. And I think they're just, again, it's just not, is it necessary? Do we need it to get the point across? And yeah. That's the thing, we don't need it.
Well, and when we talk about how they don't have enough time to tell the story, and they waste time on something like this, you know, and the sock sliding and these types of things, that's not gory. But again, it's these moments where you wonder about some of the creative decisions. But anyway,
yeah.
That's where I am on that. Quickly, just running down the episodes, do you have any thoughts we haven't talked about that stand out, like starting with Remembrance?
I will say this, you know, I was thinking through the episodes and I rewatched them all today before we got on to talk. And I think that Remembrance, Maps and Legends, and The End is the Beginning create a really nice 3-part arc. I do think it's a little bit slower than necessarily it needs to be, because honestly, this is really just about Picard getting the crew together. And it feels like, again, you probably could have done this in maybe 2 episodes if you just had them be like 50-minute episodes.
Well, I feel like, just to interject because of the topic, those three episodes in Enterprise, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, the story would have probably been paced a bit more quickly, and that would have been the pilot episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, again, I agree, and you 2 hours, you could have probably told that storyline. But again, I think they those were the best for me. Absolute Candor and Stardust City Rag is again, they leave Earth and things start to feel more scattered. You know, yeah. Going to pick up Elnor. We basically that whole episode is about picking up Elnor. And then you're adding in this other layer of what's going on in the Borg cube, which is just very strange because, again, Soji finds out that she might be what's called the Destroyer, mm-hmm. From Romulan, you know, mythology or whatever they want to call it. So that's kind of strange. And then Stardust City Rag is just, it's an episode that, again, felt like it was an entire episode that could have been done as a B plot or the A plot of another episode where B plot happens too. And so the fourth and fifth episodes really felt like you needed to rework them. So it was maybe just one episode.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm probably in the same boat as you. Remembrance I thought was fantastic. Opening scene in particular, I loved. And pretty much that whole episode, I thought, did a fantastic job of setting up the series, of establishing who Picard is now. It had the right balance of nostalgia for the next generation while creating a new story. Maps and Legends gave us wonderful moments with Laris and Jaban, and The End is the Beginning also helped to fill in some of that backstory and bring Raffi in and get us going. But yeah, those three could have been probably one long episode. Certainly, I see those three together as the pilot, the setup for the show, and then we leave. And since we've left Earth, yeah, it's things have been scattered. You're right. That's how it feels. I happened to finish Una's book right around the airing of Absolute Candor, which is when I really realized, like, wow, if you read this book, you can understand why he's going here and who this kid is, and things make so much more sense. And if you haven't read the book, you feel a little bit like, okay, so we've left Earth and now we're stopping off here to pick up someone. And then Stardust City Rag, the opening scene was just, it set things off on a very bad footing for me. And the whole episode, it was like one of those episodes that you might do on a past Star Trek series as a standalone when you had 26 episodes.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
It's like a bada bing, bada bang kind of something like that. Let's go have fun in a casino. And I know there's more to it than that because they did cram more stuff in there, but it just felt, it was a weird episode. It was a mixed bag. It had some good moments, had some stuff in it I really liked. It had some really bad moments. And overall, I felt like it didn't make a lot of sense within the context of this 10-episode story where we've got to get from point A to point B to point C. We've got to get to the end. And we've got all of this stuff going on. So I was not impressed with Stardust City Rag. I have only watched it once, though, so I'm not going to comment. I'm not ready to really comment on that episode. The others I've watched, the first three, I think I've watched each of them 12 times. And Absolute Candor, I've watched 4 or 5 times at least at this point. Stardust City Rag, I need a moment before I watch it again. And then I'm going to have to skip the opening whenever I watch it, because for me, it's just personally more than I can handle visually. So that's where we are on the episodes. So I guess last question, Matthew, is where do you think we go from here? What do you want to see happen next?
Man, this is a hard one because I'm not sure where we go from here. You know, obviously we saw the preview, we're going to the Borg cube next to try and get Soji. But I think many of the things that we talked about is how is all of this going to fit together? And I don't necessarily have a good idea as to how all of this is going to fit together. And I think kind of part of that has to do with some of my feelings in New Trek and the sequel trilogy of Star Wars, to me, kind of have many of the same issues, which is we're going to do something that looks cool that may or may not actually make sense with the whole of what we are trying to tell a story in. And, you know, part of this is that much of the story that we talked about, like with Una's book, right? It fills in all of these gaps, but the problem is that we have to have that story as a basis for everything, right?
Yeah.
And it almost feels like that should have been the story we were telling in the first season and then have this be the second season or something. And Star Wars did that with the sequel trilogy. It's like they have this 30-year gap and all these things happen, but we don't really know what those things are and we're building a story off of that. And so that's where a lot of these, I think, logical inconsistencies happen, is that it's in the writers' minds what happened, but it's not in our minds because we haven't seen it play out on screen. That's where I'm just wondering how they put all these pieces together, because there's a lot of puzzle pieces on the board right now as to what this season is going to be. But I feel like we have a very unclear idea of what the box picture looks like, right, for what the season's supposed to be. And again, I think that's really different from Star Trek, comes from that episodic television, you know, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, they got more into, you know, doing arcs and everything and really starting to kind of connect this series. So characters felt like they had a full arc from season one to their end season. But again, that's just very different because the writers are discovering all those things along the way. Here, they're trying to do all that work right up front. And I can only hope, this is my really only hope for the season, is that it does actually all pull together. Mm-hmm. Because it has me interested enough, but unfortunately I would say the last two episodes have done a disservice to the show in the sense that I'm losing a little bit of my interest. So I'm hoping more than anything they can get that back.
Yeah, that's basically how I feel. I'm still interested, I'm still enjoying the show, but I was really hooked and really invested through the first three episodes, and then the last two have caused my interest to wane a bit because it's starting to feel like I'm not sure that they actually have a clear story that's going to tie together. What do we think will happen next? For me, I think that I'm glad we're going to the Borg cube because now there's an opportunity for these disparate storylines to come together. So I certainly am hoping that that's what's going to happen, and then it will make a lot more sense. So it's possible that in the next episode or the next two episodes, that all the concerns that I have and the feeling that I have that we've got basically three different things going that don't fit together, maybe it's all going to come together. And then I can look at it and say, okay, yeah, I didn't see how it was going to fit together, but now it makes sense. And yeah, I like this story. This is good. I'm a little bit skeptical just because I feel like the story is too big. As I've said before, I don't know how they're going to pull it all together, but I would like to see them pull it all together. And I don't know if I want them to wrap this story up at the end of the season or if I want them to carry it forward to the next season. One thing I know you and I loved about Deep Space Nine is that the story kind of kept going season after season. And one thing that I won't say I don't like it about Discovery, but it's certainly different from what we were used to, is this kind of rush to get to the end of the season, and then you wrap everything up, and then you've got this totally new story with the same people in the next one. I don't know. Both are fine. It's just a different way of telling a story. I don't think this is the end of the Maddox story. I mean... this Maddox was killed. We don't know for sure that this was really Maddox. I'm guessing it was, because Girardi would have known if it was or wasn't, given their past relationship. But, you know, then again, maybe Maddox made an android of himself, and that's who they picked up here. Who knows? I think it's more likely that this was the real Maddox, but it's not the end of his connection to the story. So, yeah, I don't know. I just hope things do come together towards the end and lead to a satisfying ending and one that gets us back to a bit more optimism, like you were saying earlier. One other thing, I just interest, because we've talked so much today about can they tell this story in 10 episodes? I started a poll on Twitter. So far, it has 175 votes. And I asked, how many episodes do you feel Star Trek Picard needs to tell the story they seem to be trying to tell? And the options are 10, 11 to 16, 17 to 22, 23 to 26. And the results so far are 31.6% say, yeah, 10 episodes, that's all they need. But of course, that means that almost 70% of people think that they need more than 10 episodes. And most people, 34.5%, say 11 to 16. And my personal feeling is I think 16 episodes would probably be a good length for this. I don't think we need 26.
Yeah.
And I know they're not going to do 20-something in TV these days, but I think 16 would be pretty good. 9% say 17 to 22, and 24.9% say 23 to 26. And I think that's interesting, too, because I think that reflects the preference of a lot of older fans probably for those seasons that we got in past Star Trek, where we had the 26 for most seasons, and then by the end of Enterprise, we had gotten down to 22.
Yeah, so I voted in the poll, and I also voted for 16 as well. I felt like that was a good number for the amount of story that they're trying to tell. And honestly, it just felt like the way for them to then be able to spend a little bit more time with these storylines, especially since the storyline I felt like we were getting with Soji has been so rushed and compact, whereas the other parts of the story have felt so laissez-faire. Like the Picard yeah. part of the story has felt like, oh, it's taking too long to kind of get to the point. Yeah. And so it's like they haven't been able to find the right balance necessarily between their plot points. And so, yeah, we'll be
interested. Well, the series is called Star Trek Picard, so you know he's going to be the main focus. And that is part of the reason, no doubt.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess my final thought on the whole thing, though, is just that despite the fact that, you know, I've been critical about things, this has been a rather critical conversation, I think, compared with a lot of the Star Trek Picard discussion that's out there, I'm glad we have the show. I'm loving seeing Patrick Stewart back, and I am enjoying the show. And I just, you know, my standards for Star Trek storytelling are quite high because it's a franchise that I care so much about. And I care about its ability to provide important commentary on society and on life. And I don't know. I just feel like it feels a little bit like an experiment. Like, let's do 10 episodes and see how it turns out. And then along the way, they said, oh, well, let's do this huge story. And it isn't completely settling well with me, but I am enjoying it. I'm glad we have it. And I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a position where it's like, I've been critical, but that doesn't mean I'm not interested in seeing where it continues to go. And I think we can be critical of things and still like things yes. and want things to be done better. And, you know, that's part of the fun of being a fan. And, you know, I don't think anything we've said here is to be disrespectful to anybody working on the show or anything like that. I do think for both you and I, you know, obviously Deep Space Nine being our favorite, we come from a place where we know what Star Trek writing can be. And so I think we have those high expectations because Star Trek has already met those lofty expectations before. And I've been rewatching Deep Space Nine slowly, and I'm in the second season right now. And even through season one and season two, which are kind of seasons that people really discount on that show, I've been actually surprised at how good the writing and the connections are between the episodes and everything, even to that point. So for us to say all these things is not because we hate Star Trek or whatever. It's really just because we already know how good Star Trek can be. And we just want it, because we love it, we want it to continue to be what we know it can be.
Exactly. All right, Matthew. Well, it's been fun talking about Star Trek Picard, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm. To the journey!
Although I love the season finale of season one in Voyager.
Learning curve.
I love that episode personally.
That's not a season finale.
I love the episode. No, it's a standalone episode, but I love it. I'd want to keep that as a standalone episode.
Are you insane?
I love that episode. What are you talking about?
You can choose two things from that episode that you can keep. Go for it.
Earl Grey.
The powers at Paramount at the time, they wanted it to be left more ambiguous so the audience were...
But it's not all that ambiguous, I think.
Right. Well, you were questioning it.
Because there would have to... But there would have there would have to coincidentally be something that happened to cause it to discharge and transport without Data doing that. That seems unlikely.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
You should buy yourself another one and do that. Like the little circle that goes around the top of the saucer section.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'll look nice.
And maybe a little bit on the nacelles as well. You know, just accents.
Or you could just get like a sticker of Jeffrey Chrome's as Shran and then stick it on the underside of it, maybe.
Ooh, just a big Shran face on the underside of the ship. I like
that. Or kind of stylized, like how the Second World War bombers would have the pet pinup girl painted on the side.
Shran the pinup girl?
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I gotta say about your thing about Vasquez Rocks, I mean, I'm disappointed that it's actually supposed to be Vasquez Rocks.
Oh.
Yeah, because that means that we're not gonna see Lazarus.
Okay. Yeah. I know you love the alternative factor, probably not a connection with Picard.
They all can still exist.
I was holding out hope, you know. I was holding out hope. So, you never know.
There's lots of rocks. He could be on the other side.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond, as Matthew will explain in a moment. You'll find us everywhere you get your podcasts, so just look up Trek.fm or the name of the show, or visit our website at Trek.fm. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. I have a feeling you probably have some things to say. After what we said today, there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. It is a closed group, so if you're not yet a member, you'll need to click join and answer two questions and agree to the group rules, and then an admin can let you in. If you'd like to send us email, you can do that using the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Please choose the Ready Room, and that message will come directly to me. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at trekfm is the username on both. And our main Facebook page is at facebook.com/trekfm. Now, Matthew, of course I mentioned, we're talking about more than Star Trek on the network, and you have a lot of other stuff going on, so tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, you could find me. You know, we do The Orb when we get a chance, and we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine and our love for that, and we are hoping to be able to do that soon. So forgive us for taking a little reprieve and talking a little Picard. You can also find me doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show where we talk about all of the fandoms we love. You know, there are so many other fandoms out there that we really want to be able to talk about, and 602 Club is the place that we do that. So join us. You'll love the show, I think, with all that we get to talk about. It's been a lot of fun this year. We've talked about some real old school stuff. We've got new stuff, everything in between. So you can also find me doing a couple other shows. I'm doing Owlpost with Drea Kaufman, where we talk about Harry Potter each and every week. And then I do Aggressive Negotiations, as I mentioned earlier, with John Mills, as we talk about Star Wars each and every week.
Excellent. And if you'd like to find me, I'm not podcasting too much these days because I've got some big things happening, you know, in life and work. And it's been difficult for quite some time, as people know who listen to the shows or follow me on Twitter. But you can still hear me on all the past episodes of The Ready Room, which go back to 2011 when we started this show, which then gave birth to the network. And also, Matthew and I have many episodes of The Orb talking about DS9, and I used to host many other shows on the network, such as Warp 5. And Matthew and I actually started Literary Treks years ago, and we did many episodes of that together. So you can hear me a lot if you want to dig into the back catalog. You can also find my writing on the official website at StarTrek.com. And I'm working on Notes on the Line, which is my notes show for Picard, like I did for Discovery Season 1. First episode is ready to record. I got sick and I couldn't record, and then I had deadlines. But I'm going to get that out to everyone very soon so you can really get an in-depth feel for my take on Picard. And in the first episode, of course, Remembrance, when that drops, just watch the feeds for The Line and the Trek FM Master feed. And then lastly, if you'd like to find me on social media, my username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but that's my username everywhere in social media if you would like to look me up. And if you'd like to help us keep all of the shows on the network coming each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. It really takes a lot of money to run this network, more than you might think, and it's been a little bit tight lately, keeping everything going. So if you would like to support the network, we could greatly use your help, and we really appreciate any support that you can give us. We do have perks, including some bonus material, associate producer credits, a chance to take part in the Patrons Roundtable, where you can get on mic with fellow listeners and some of our hosts and talk Star Trek just like we did today. And that goes out to everyone through our feeds. And you can find out again everything that you need to know at patreon.com/trekfm. And speaking of our wonderful supporters, I'd like to give a special thank you to the associate producers of The Ready Room: Norman C. Lau, Renee Roberts, Zachary Frueling, Sam Piasek, Tim Robertson, David Shuford, and Ju Kim. Thank you so much for your support. Well, Matthew, I'm glad we got to talk about Picard. We'll have to talk about DS9 soon on an orb and get back on mic together more often.
Well, Chris, I think I'm going to go check out that Quark's bar here on Free Cloud since he's got this brand new establishment. And as I do that, I think it's time to stick a fractal neuronic clone in it because the Ready Room is done.